Similes. Easy enough. Metaphor. Also easy. Direct metaphor. Just like a simile. Implied metaphor. Now we're getting complex. Hyperbole. Easy again. Great for insults. How about metonymy or synecdoche? Wait, I know these, you say. Let me remember. I haven't heard them since high school. Metonymy is when a part of something represents the whole. Oh, isn't that synecdoche? Don't stress the difference. This episode can help. Welcome to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers, newbies, and veterans, and everyone in between. We're hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Rooms, all from Writers, Inc. Books. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Each episode lasts as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, grab a short commute, or take a brisk walk. Resources and links are in the show notes. Visit us at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Now, on to this week's episode. Figurative. Words are phrases that mean more than what the words actually say. The Middle English figurative means representing symbolically and comes from the Latin figuratus, to shape. The opposite is literal language, words that say exactly what they mean. That's a lot like denotation and connotation. From the last episode, literal is exact, figurative shapes the meaning. Figurative language is sometimes called metaphorical language, since metaphor basically means transforming. Middle English, coming from Middle French, coming from Latin, which comes from the Greek, metapheron, to transfer, from meta, which means beyond, and pheron, which means bear, beyond what the actual meaning bears or carries. And please forgive my Greek and my Latin. I didn't take those languages. Metaphors state things that are not actually possible, such as the apple of my eye, the idea in a nutshell, and the politician sitting on the fence. Something is suggested rather than being actually true. Apples cannot be in eyes. Nuts are not cracked open to find ideas, although fortune cookies are. And politicians, well, they may try to take both sides of an issue, but they don't actually sit on the top rail of a fence while doing so. And notice, it's a fence, not barbed wire. Maybe if choosing both sides of an issue meant they had to sit on barbed wire, they wouldn't. Metaphors operate based on comparisons, the matching of two unlike things which still have certain traits in common. Here's a famous comparison from Winston Churchill's book, While England Slept, published in 1936. Dictators ride to and fro upon tigers, which they dare not dismount, and the tigers are getting hungry. Churchill's metaphor suggests that oppressed populations are tigers. He's directly speaking about Hitler and Germany. His comparison is a reference or allusion to the Chinese proverb, "He who rides a tiger is afraid to dismount," advising people against risky endeavors that they will fear to stop. 5 years later, in 1941, Churchill comes back with another metaphor that builds on this one, which he extends. The whipped jackal, representing Mussolini, who to save his own skin has made of Italy a vassal state of Hitler's empire, is frisking up by the side of the German tiger with yelps not only of appetite, that could be understood, but even of triumph. Germany here is the tiger, while Mussolini is a jackal. When metaphors are strongly crafted, the echo resonates with the reader and all take on additional emphasis. All comparisons, similes, metaphors, hyperbole, metonymy, metaphysical conceits, personification, they are all actually types of metaphors. You can create a comparison equation to find the full metaphor. It's as simple as this equals that. For the simplest and direct comparisons, both sides of the equation are obvious. Life is a walking shadow, Shakespeare famously said, and he meant that life is shadow, insubstantial, a cast shadow, which has no true matter. This is from Goethe. Kindness is the golden chain by which we are bound together. Kindness here is a golden chain, linking us together as a chain is linked together. Golden, because it has a great richness to it. But gold is also malleable. It has a weakness that other metals do not. When the comparison is implied, one side of the comparison must be supplied by us using our logical brain. The following is also Shakespeare from the same speech in Macbeth. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. We have implied metaphors with these. The word creeps means a creeping animal or insect, and we don't know which insect it is, but that represents the slowness of time, the tomorrows to come, the future. Syllable is a brief life. Recorded time, well, time is a book filled with words that have syllables. Thus, each syllable represents an individual life in the massive book of time, itself a metaphor. Syllables make up words. Some syllables stand alone for meaning. Most words need more than one syllable for meaning. Some lives can stand alone. Most lives need to be coupled with others. And that's a rich metaphor, for the meaning contains more and more as we take it apart and analyze it. The word yesterdays, in that famous speech by Macbeth, represents the passage of time. Yesterdays, the passage. The past is a path. Lighted represents the lamps of our past experiences, lanterns, torches on the path. So our experiences are torches. Brief candle equals a brief life, another comparison of brevity, just like syllable. Figurative language has three major types. Metaphor, direct, implied, extended. Second is simile, and three is personification. Additional types of metaphors are metonymy and synecdoche. The metaphysical conceit is basically an extended metaphor. Apostrophe is a special form of personification, as is anthropomorphism. We also have hyperbole and latates. We'll talk about extended metaphor and conceits and personification and latates in the next episode. Today, though, I will devote a good bit of time to metaphors and similes. If you understand these two, all the others become much easier. We'll touch on metonymy and synecdoche, then we'll close with hyperbole. Similes are the easiest comparison to create. A simile is a comparison of two unlike things, using the comparing words of like, as, than, or resembles. Few people pay attention to the than or resembles. The car raced through the night like a horse charging across the plain. While the two things compared should be greatly different, they do need to have traits which connect them. Both the car and the horse move rapidly. That's the connecting trait for the comparison. One is metal and requires a motor. The other is flesh and requires a heart. These differences create the figurative aspect of the simile. Here's another example. Take the sentence, "The arrow shot quickly through the air." Turn it into, "The arrow shot through the air like a bolt of lightning." Or better yet, "The lightning-fast arrow shot through the air." The first of these sentences is not a comparison. The second is. The third sentence turns the simile into an implied metaphor. Practice these two skills, creating a simile and converting it into a metaphor, by crafting your own comparison with something that moves quickly. Not every like or as will signal a comparison. Look for two unlike things, nouns, to be compared. Both like and as can also be used as conjunctions, so be careful. Like and as will join two separate thoughts. Look for keywords following as, in, as if, as well as though. If we have a subject and a verb, we very likely have the conjunction as opposed to the simile as. To check for a simile, insert the comparison equation. This equals that. Here is a practice to help you recognize comparisons. First, we have to decide whether a comparison is made or not. This equals that. With similes, it's easy to find the comparison word of like or as. First off, "I am not dressed today as I usually am." That's not a simile. "I have a problem eating away my insides like acid on a car battery." That's a simile. The problem is like acid on a car battery. The wheat, like golden waves, shimmered in the sun. Simile, wheat equals golden waves. Jane, who liked water, jumped in the lake. Not a simile. Old man Parker was as blind as a bat. That is a simile. Parker is just like a bat. We walked down the street as the sun shone. Is that a simile? No. The mean words were like water off a duck's back to him. Simile. The words are like water rolling off a duck's feathers. We do have things called epic similes, a term which sounds vastly important, doesn't it? An epic simile will run for several lines, emphasizing the person or object which receives the comparison. It's sometimes called the Homeric simile, for the blind poet's epic is filled with them. The Homeric or epic simile follows a pattern, stating, like a blank, when it blank. Here's an example from the Iliad, famous for its epic similes. As when the shudder of the west wind suddenly rising scatters across the water. Great imagery, isn't it? And the water darkens beneath it, so darkening were settled the ranks of Achaeans and the Trojans in the plain. So we have the comparison of the shudder of the wind darkening the water beneath it, and the Achaeans and the Trojans coming onto the plain to battle, darkening the plain. Unlike similes, metaphors do not have clues, such as the words like or as. Many metaphors can be difficult to locate. As long as you remember to look for an actual impossibility, you should have no difficulty spotting them. Remember, the apple of my eye doesn't mean you have an apple in your eye. The water looked like diamonds, a simile, is just as much a comparison as the water sparkled in the sunlight. Again, the key to finding the metaphor is to look for the comparison that is not actually possible. Here's a rich metaphor from Miriam Schiff. On the human chessboard, all moves are possible. Chessboard equals the sphere in which we live. The chess game itself represents living from birth to death. Chess pieces are different kinds of people. We have only a few people who are kings and queens. Some people are bishops and knights. Some have status positions like castles. Most of us are pawns. Schiff suggests that someone who is a pawn can move diagonally like a bishop or have multiple powerful moves like a queen. Life doesn't operate in this matter unless a powerful intervention from an outside force occurs. For Schiff, that outside player who moves the pawns then equals a godlike being, moving pieces at will to win against an opposing godlike being. Movement on the board? Well, we can only move forward through life. We cannot move backward. Other players can maneuver around the pawns and take us out of the game. One difference is that when we reach the other side, we do not transform and take a new position on the board, unless we believe in reincarnation. Here's another practice. 7 different sentences, and all but one are metaphors. Which one is not the metaphor? The rival coaches said that they would bury the hatchet. The truth is down an impossible road. The walls have ears. John stood on his head to gain his mother's attention. The runner flew over the hurdle. Terry was the dark horse in the student council election. The bone of contention between them went back to college. Which one is not a metaphor? That's right. John stood on his head to gain his mother's attention. That can actually occur. And metaphors are things that cannot actually be. What things are compared in each of the following? Decide first if you have a simile or metaphor, and then figure out what the comparison is. For example, in The Water Sparkled Like Diamonds, we have a simile because of the word like, and water equals diamonds. From Arthur Gordon, the sound of the waves was only a rhythmic whisper, like a giant breathing. Simile or metaphor? Well, we have like, so it's a simile. We have the sound of the waves is a giant's breathing, a whisper. From Nancy Hale, the water lay gray and wrinkled like an elephant's skin. Simile or metaphor? Simile. The water is like an elephant's skin. Tiny tongues of flame licked up the pine needles. Simile or metaphor? That's a metaphor. There's no comparing word. And the tiny tongues of flame? Well, first we have flames like tongues. They're licking. The stampeding children rushed into the room, trampling scattered soft toys and jumping over others. Simile or metaphor? No comparison word, so it's a metaphor. The children are something that can stampede, whether that be horses, or wildebeest, or elephants, or whatever. From Coningsby Dawson, a regular broom of a wind swept vigorously up the valley. Simile or metaphor? Metaphor. No comparing word. The wind is like a broom sweeping away. From William Shakespeare, night's candles are burnt out. Simile or metaphor? Metaphor. The lack of stars equals candles that have been burnt out. And from Cicero, to stumble twice against the same stone is a proverbial disgrace. No comparison word, it's a metaphor. How does it work as a metaphor? Stumbling in life is like stumbling against a stone. That definitely is an implied metaphor because we had to provide the other side of the this equals that equation. On to metonymy. It contains that transforming root of meta. Instead of using the name for what something is, such as a steeplechase, a trait associated with the thing is used, the turf, when we use a metonymy. Baseball becomes the diamond. It's an element of the game. The Oval Office refers to the office of the president. Friends, Romans, countrymen, Mark Antony calls out in Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, lend me your ears. Those ears are an example of metonymy. In the etymology of metonymy, we also have O-N-Y-M-A, onyma, the same root for which we build the word synonym. Onyma means name. Thus, we are transforming the name of the object. Journalists will use crown to refer to the queen or king. We say Wall Street when we actually mean the New York Stock Exchange. We say plastic when we mean credit card. It's a trait associated with the thing that represents the thing. Synecdoche is often confused with metonymy. Synecdoche is when a part of something represents the whole. Hop on your wheels and go stands for a car ride. Syn equals same. Doche for ektoche is Greek for interpretation. That is, this individual part can be interpreted as the same thing as a whole. See how close it is in meaning to metonymy, which is why so many people are confused? All hands on deck, the classic captain's call, stands for all the sailors aboard the ship. The captain also needs their heads and feet, not just their hands. Instead of calling roll in the classroom, we count heads, which works fine until a fire drill is called within a couple of minutes of class starting and the teacher hasn't figured out who's really absent. We tell children to learn their ABCs when we actually mean the entire alphabet. The persona in T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock bemoans that he should have been a pair of ragged claws scuttling across the floors of silent seas. His middle-aged life is nothing more than an insect-like lobster snapping at others and scraping around for food. Samuel Taylor Coleridge's Ancient Mariner claims the western wave was all aflame when he means the sunset colored the entire ocean in flame orange. A sermon in Toni Morrison's Beloved reminds us that they don't love your eyes, they just as soon pluck them out, which means they don't love a person themselves. They would rather that person was completely gone. And then we have Percy Bysshe Shelley's Ozymandias, of which only parts of the once proud whole remain, increasing the contrast of the expectations of Ozymandias against the irony of his failure to influence posterity, as he thought he would. Half sunk a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions red which survive, stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them, and the ear that fed. We have a broken statue in the desert, almost submerged by the blowing sand of times. We have the parts mentioned only. The statue itself is never mentioned. Hyperbole, an intentional exaggeration for effect, comes to us also from the Greek, just as many of these literary and rhetorical terms come from the Greek rather than the Latin. Hyperbole comes from a word that means to exceed. Hyper equals super or over. Bole comes from balen, to throw. It's a super throw of a comparison, in other words. The structure of a hyperbole is often in the form of a simile. He's as old as the hills. In no way can that man have the millions of years of the geographic feature of hills. We've made his age exceed possibility. Winston Churchill was also a master of the insult, using the hyperbole to do it. You can always count on them to do the right thing, he said, after they've tried everything else. That everything else is the exaggeration. His famous blood, toil, tears, and sweat speech contains this description of Hitler's Germany, a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark and lamentable catalog of human crime. Well, we can't know if it has ever been surpassed because history doesn't record everything. Here's another Churchill insult of Viscount Montgomery, Edward Marsh. In defeat, unbeatable. In victory, unbearable. That's from Churchill's book, Ambrosia and Small Beer. Advertising claims are often hyperbolic. The best car ever made. Best beer ever. Weather announcers, the ones who aren't meteorologists and astronomers, are guilty of saying, hottest temperature ever recorded on any planet ever. That's a double whammy hyperbole, using time and place, ever recorded, and a planet. In poetry, we have several one-liners. Ralph Waldo Emerson's Concord Hymn, the shot heard around the world. Robert Burns will love his red, red rose until all the seas go dry, my dear, and the rocks melt with the sun. William Wordsworth saw 10,000 daffodils at a single glance as he wandered lonely as a cloud. Here's William Congreve. Heaven has no rage, like love to hatred turned, nor hell a fury, like a woman scorned. And Dorothy Parker's comment, with its two exaggerations, followed by an obvious lie, which makes us rethink our belief in the exaggerations. Oh, life is a glorious cycle of song, a medley of contemporanea, and love is a thing that can never go wrong, and I am Marie of Romania. Two exaggerations, a glorious cycle, and life never going wrong, followed by an obvious lie, which makes us rethink the fact that life is perfect and love is wonderful. We've covered a lot today on comparisons, and we have more to go. In the next episode, we launch with a brief recap of simile and metaphor, mere seconds, then discuss extended metaphors and metaphysical conceits, litotes, which sounds hard but isn't, and personification, with a bit on anthropomorphism and the special subcategory of apostrophe. Inspiration today comes from Sharon Olds. I think to a poet, the human community is like the community of birds to a bird, singing to each other. Love is one of the reasons we are singing to one another. Love of language itself, love of sound, love of singing itself, and love of the other birds. Thanks for listening to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by Emma Lee from Writers, Inc. Books, assisted by Remy Black and Edie Runes. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Music is licensed through Audio Jungle, called Background Music Loop. Its creator is Alexander Polishchuk, known on Audio Jungle as Plastic 3. The music comes in different iterations. Show notes and resource links for this and other episodes can be found at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Write to us at winkbooks@aol.com when you have questions, comments, and speculations. We will try to answer you as quickly as possible. By the way, we will not mind your email address. That's rude. If you find value in our content, share with your writing friends or write a review. We're small beans here without the advertising budget of the big peeps, and you can make a difference. And whatever occurs, right on.